Hello, everybody. Thanks for dialing in to today's presentation. My name is Adrian Ladbury. I'm the Editorial Director of Commercial Risk, which obviously includes Commercial Risk Europe, Commercial Risk Africa, Commercial Risk Asia. We are very much focused on the wants and needs of the European and international risk management and insurance management community. And we have today put on our latest webinar on property crisis management lessons learned from COVID-19, a very important topic that I think we all agree needs to be looked at in great depth, as particularly as we continue towards the emergence from the lockdown, facilities being reopened that have been closed down. There's all sorts of issues and matters to be discussed. We've gathered a great group of speakers who I'm going to introduce in a minute. Now, this has obviously been a difficult time for everyone, and whether or not to continue operation, whether to run it lean and mean, whether to just completely close down has been a big commercial decision, and also obviously under direction of governments as well. At the moment, we're sitting here in a position where a lot of us are having to make very important decisions about how we risk manage our way through this hoped-for recovery. So what do we have here today? We have a presentation, first of all, from Martin Schach-Schneider of Belfort, who are our sponsors for today's webinar. Thank you very much, Martin. Martin's going to talk through the big issues from his perspective for 10 minutes. And then we have a discussion with a group of experts who have, thank you very much, agreed to join us on today's discussion. We have Thierry Portavin of AGCS, Bianca Villar of Swiss Re Corporate Solutions, Alexander Monk, president of the GVNW, the German Risk and Insurance Management Association, and Doğu Özden of IRMA, the Turkish Risk Management Association. He's also risk manager for Tofas Fiat Chrysler in Turkey. Thank you so much to all of you for joining us to engage in this discussion. So after Martin's presentation, we're going to have a Q&A between ourselves. There is also the option of taking questions from all of you out there who are listening in and watching. Please use the questions box. I think it's on the right-hand side of your screen, as opposed to the chat box, if that is available to you. And we will keep an eye on those questions as they come in and answer them as we can. If we don't have time to answer any of the questions, we will follow up and answer them afterwards. So that's enough from me. I will now hand over to Martin. Martin, take it away.
Can you see my slides now?
Yes, I can see the slide.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So, Adrian, thanks for the opportunity for this presentation today. We fixed the title of the presentation a couple of weeks ago, and honestly, today I wouldn't name it Lessons Learned because the pandemic is far from over, but perhaps it makes sense to draw some lessons from it. And you all are invited to find your own thoughts and teachings from the following pictures. So I would like to say or to show from a restoration company's daily work, and you will surely be able to scale these pictures to your business and your challenges. So the first picture is a metaphor picture for the most prominent example of COVID-19 outbreak on Diamond Princess cruise ship. Identified in early February, the ship was chained by Japanese authorities and all the crew members and passengers were quarantined for several weeks. And that at a time, the whole world had no real idea of what this pandemic would mean to all of us. So unfortunately, in the end, 10 people died and over 700 were infected. And Belfort was called by the owner. We developed dedicated disinfection protocol and worked there with more than 200 volunteer technicians from Japan and from North America. And we cleaned and disinfected the entire ship, the entire equipment, and also passengers' belongings left behind. And if you imagine, the ship was made for 2,600 passengers and normally has more than 1,000 employees, so a lot of things to do. And in the end, the authorities certified this ship as COVID-19 free and released the vessel. But most important to say, none of our colleagues became infected. But it's not only a story of a disinfection or cleaning job fighting against an invisible enemy. It's more an example how just one single incident can shake a whole industry. And it's more fighting against the invisible enemy like reputation damage. So it's not only cleaning property, it's also, or it was also a job of securing reputation and care for trust of future passengers. Next simple example is we basically do all our operations in contaminated environment, and therefore we are using large quantities of personal safety equipment like suits and masks and gloves and so on. Imagine 250,000 restoration projects a year and two suits per employee a day. That makes a large amount of consumables a day. And suddenly the purchase prices for them exploded. So at some examples, in more than 1,000%. Yeah. So the simplest and cheapest products we are using in the daily business suddenly causes the most headaches we have in our business. And long-term suppliers do not deliver agreed quantities and may have find someone willing to pay higher or significant higher prices, or deliveries have been stolen or confiscated by authorities. So again, the simplest and cheapest product became the most difficult ones. And the ability to deliver becomes more and more important than the thoughts about working capital. And I would like to mention this as an example that maybe in a new shareholder value is meaning protecting values instead of interests and return of investment. And another simple example of our claims experience, you cannot send employees by email. We have been called by a client in the beginning of June. The customer asked us for some help because of a major fire claim in Morocco. And the affected company is part of a supply chain. So I can imagine not a lot of business interruption pressure. So in the past, it was easy to us to work in North Africa. We have done this with our operations from France or from Spain. But this time, as you may know, Morocco closed its borders since the middle of March. And in fact, you could not enter the country and you could not leave the country until now. The borders are still closed. And of course, you can send pictures from a damaged site, and there are solutions in place for virtual site inspection. But in the end of the day, you need well-trained employees or well-trained technicians to do the restoration work and the recovery work. And this example reminds me as well on the lack of common digital solutions in our industry. Of course, there are solutions for claims inspection, but there's not common standard like I would wish to have. To come to the example of mass claims business, I feel that the industry missed the opportunity of disruptive improvements because there is no common solution. There are a lot of isolated solutions, and maybe one side benefited solutions, but there's not a real solution for everyone in the industry. And I fear we're missing some opportunities by this. And to come to an end, in my view, COVID-19 is a kind of catalyst converter, a catalyst boosts or accelerate reactions that might happen anyway, but it accelerates the speed or the amount of reaction. So certainly certain developments and reactions were basically already visible and perhaps necessary before. And now the pandemic is forcing us to work totally different, and it's making us completely reviewing our way of working in certain sectors of business. So maybe earlier than some of us would prefer to, but in the end, following a kind of logic or the ugly truth. And I'm quite sure this reaction will not stop when the catalyst is removed. It may slow down, but it won't stop or even reverse. So that's the end of my presentation. Adrian, it's your turn.
Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. Apologies for that. Thank you very much, Martin. Fantastic presentation. The end, it says it all, really. This is an ongoing issue. This is going to carry on. This isn't just going to stop, as some people in the UK appear to think. This is something that we're all going to have to live with for the rest of our careers. So it's about how we manage our way through it and how we manage our way out of it. Now, I'm going to throw the first question at Bianca. Key challenges presented by the pandemic from a loss prevention and property perspective, from your perspective, what were they? Which sectors have been most affected in your mind? And how do you feel companies have coped with the inability to inspect properties and the travel restrictions that Martin mentioned? I mean, it's a complete change in the way this side of the industry operates. What is your perspective on these questions, Bianca?
Well, the first question, what are the key challenges from a loss prevention perspective and a property perspective? I would like to raise three topics. For one, obviously, travel restrictions were there, so the risk engineering couldn't go to the customers. So the service to our customers needed to be maintained, and that obviously was a key challenge, how to cope with the situation in order to work very closely with the customer. Secondly, obviously, there was a higher loss potential for our customers. So within the shutdown and the startup phase, naturally, there's a higher fire risk and a higher risk for explosion or machinery breakdown. With the vacant premises, that was a big risk. And thirdly, I would like to mention that customers tried to adapt to the changing conditions and tried to change their production. For example, they tried to produce sanitizers instead of body care products, or facial masks instead of clothes, and respirators instead of other devices. We were challenged in terms of how to support the customer best in changing operations. In terms of most affected sectors, it's very difficult to come up with a few examples, and by no means it's any order of priority, but I would like to point out, obviously, the hospitals and healthcare facilities for obvious reasons. They were in crisis mode for weeks and months, and also challenges on their employees. Then I would like to pick the automotive industry and mention that for the supply chain. Given it's one of the industries most exposed to supply chain risks, the breakdown of that did cause challenges. So not only the government order to comply with social distancing measures, but also the other locations or suppliers which couldn't transport corresponding break in operations. And lastly, I would like to point out the chemical industry. I already mentioned during shutdown and startup phase, the higher risk of explosion. So I would like to also mention that in terms of sectors. And how companies coped with the situation is, Martin already mentioned it, use of technology was key. Teleconferences, virtual surveys were key. Also, we tried to support our customers with brochures to be prepared for the shutdown and also the startup phase. We tried tailor-made solutions, so work really closely with the customers, in particular in case of change of occupancies and change of operations.
Mm-hmm. So Bianca, can I just ask you, why is there a higher risk of explosion for when you restart? What causes that?
The process safety incidents are up to 50% of the process safety incidents come up, in particular when you do this startup phase again. Or the, mm-hmm. So it occurs much more frequently because of the hot works and so forth. Within unoccupied premises, you do have all the combustible material which needs to be stored, which is in usage usually, but during the phase where the premises are not occupied, you also have that risk. So I don't want to point out this startup phase and the shutdown phase, but also the unoccupied premises phase. Mm. So all three of them.
Yeah. My layman's mind would say, well, if it's unoccupied and nothing's happening, there's no risk. But obviously that's not the case. Clearly not the case. Well, what are the main risks involved with unoccupied?
The security standards are difficult to be maintained. And also the combustible material, which is not in usage, but where you basically have the higher risk of transport boxes, pallets being not in use, but stored in production areas. So it was a challenge in each and every phase.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bianca. So Thierry, I believe AGCS published quite an in-depth report on unoccupied and the risks involved with that earlier in the lockdown. But so I move the questions on to you. How well do you think that companies coped with the pandemic from a disaster recovery and crisis management perspective? And do you think that the pandemic led to a loss of focus on other key risks as risk managers were overrun and completely focused on this element?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, being on the insurance side in the corporate segments, even if it is always a little bit ambitious to make general comments or statements, I would like to say that the corporate companies have coped relatively well with the arrival of the pandemic from a crisis management point of view, I think. And I would like to highlight different levels. In terms of organizational impacts, the global companies are in general relatively well prepared with business con- continuity plans and strong governance in order to manage a change of organization and to ensure the safety of their employees. So, and also the remote work is not really new in a global company, and the IT infrastructures have demonstrated very good resilience. Also, the strong leadership needed to deal with these challenges. I think large companies have developed this last few years. People are used to working in cross functions, geographic areas. So, but of course, having said that, we have to be honest. No one was fully prepared for such a scenario and had a full plan already in place. And it was and remains, of course, very challenging. In terms of business impact and the ability to deal with such, I would say that it's a different story. And despite of the fact that all companies, without exception, have been significantly impacted, there are a lot of course, strong disparities between industry sectors, geographic areas, and different business model, and so on. So, I don't want to go into deeper, but just an example in the manufacturing and production sectors, company had to deal with, like Bianca said, with shutdowns of production facilities, partially or fully relocate the productions or find alternatives. In automotive, for example, industry, like Bianca mentioned as well, the disruption of the supply chain sometimes heavily impacted. With lack of raw materials or components or logistics challenges, sometimes have emerged as insoluble problems, you know. So of course, some company better prepare. I've anticipated a little bit, but it was really a challenge for everybody. In some other segments like retail, entertainment or hospitality sectors, for example, consequences were even more dramatic because the sole option was very often to cancel or just to close the business, and I don't speak about the travel or transportation sectors. In terms of recovery, to be honest with you, I'm probably not in the best position to give you an overview about this topic. But what we learn from our clients is, depending on the respective business sector, of course, but it appears very difficult to predict. Everybody is currently trying to make assumptions in respect to economic scenarios and how a recovery could look. We all know these L or V impact curves, but on the other hand, I'm convinced that each and every big company, global company, is working on indicators and monitoring really closely what will be the next months and years for their own business. I know because it's exactly what we are doing on our side. So within this general context, I think, what about the risk and also how the insurance company or corporate business we deal with these challenges. I think it's like all big companies and small company. We had to take care first about the safety of our people, and to be sure that they can work properly remotely. Our business it's just about people and the ability to connect and deal with our clients and partners. So it's very crucial. In this situation, I think. The intensive communication and collaboration with our clients and broker was key, and it's still key to understand the situation of the risk and to align understanding the coverage, of course. And without speaking about prevention measures, like Bianca said about when you shut down a facility. So it's a lot about communications, stay in contact. Well, we already mentioned the remote site surveys and which are key elements for the risk assessment for the insurer. So I think we use this opportunity to accelerate the deployment of our remote site survey application we have already developed. I think it's a good opportunity to test this approach. Even like Martin said, we see resistance. It's not just company tool, I would say. It's not an industry tool. because, and I think we have to move in this direction because with our clients and broker, because you know all the surveys have been postponed, and in reality they will be cancelled because nobody will be able to catch up anyway. So so it can be a big challenge for renewals for our clients. So. In underwriting, just focusing on underwriting, during renewals, of course, it's crucial to have a clear understanding of the risks, change, and the relationship. And I think what I can say is, I can see is the trust, the relationship, the knowledge we have developed with our clients, you know, I think it was a really big advantage, you know, to take decision, to collaborate together and to solve this this challenge. For the new business, I think it's more difficult, of course, because we don't know the current situation of the risk. You know, the risk has nothing to do with the normal and stable one. So I think it's probably a little bit more challenging. For the claims part, we have to deal with, you know, and to answer to your question, we have to deal with traditional claims, you know, fire and catnat, and it's still happening, and we have to deliver the services. So. Again, the collaboration with clients, our ability to mobilize our experts network globally or locally, I think it's a key success factor. The remote assessment when necessary, of course, is based, but it's based on close collaboration with our clients. And we see that the clients are facing challenges in terms of repair capabilities and delays. So, you know, we are the business interruption, for example, loss estimation, it's a real challenging topic for all parties involved now, you know. So to conclude, I think the big company did well, but of course, when your business is heavily impacted, that is not easy, and sometimes it's even just closed. So I think in the future we'll face new challenges in terms of risk. And not only about the supply chain disruptions or restart operation or maintenance cost cutting, but also probably the clients will have to change or manage their supply chain a little bit differently. And I think the technology can help the industry sector again to be more efficient using a remote solution. I think it's probably a lesson learned of this crisis, and it works. So I hope I answered to your question.
Yes, Thierry, thank you very much. Alexander, let's get the customer's perspective. What for you? I mean, talking to your colleagues at GVNW, obviously not specifically about your company, but your general feeling from discussions with your members, etc. What are the main disaster recovery and crisis management lessons that we can learn from this? Secondly, how do you think the insurance market reacted when dealing with property claims? And what kind of technology has helped deal with this situation? What do you think?
Well, thank you, Adrian. In a nutshell, on the first part, I would say the main lessons would be plan for the unexpected and technology wins. Plan for the unexpected. Let me clarify that from my perspective and from the perspective of the German market, the pandemic didn't come as a black swan scenario. So it was not an unknown scenario. It was something that, you know, at least larger companies, but also the German government was waiting for since a number of years, but it came completely unexpected. And this is when you see companies succeed that have good crisis management plans and good business continuity plans in place. And the second part then, and I'll come back to what Martin has said, the pandemic as a catalytic booster, I think was the term you used, certainly was a catalytic booster to using technology that some of the colleagues in the market still thought they didn't need. And I think those companies who were able to ramp up their IT systems, if you know they didn't use home office concepts before and concepts to deal with customers other than in physical meetings, they had a clear advantage, and they eventually succeeded or steered through this crisis much better than others. Overall, I totally agree with Thierry. Even though the scenarios we were looking at the beginning looked very, very bad, At least for Germany, I can say we steered through most of it, and knock on wood that this continues to be the case, in a much better fashion in average than we would have expected. So overall, I think the main lessons are really to plan well and continue to train well for any kind of scenarios. By the way, on an anecdotally part, I'm always surprised to see that whenever there is a crisis scenario that that starts to happen, it doesn't seem to be under the top five on the the usual risk registers that we use internally or some of the insurers or brokers provide. But we could probably try to philosophize why this is the case. Now, the insurance market, I think there's been a lot of criticism about applying terms and conditions in a too narrow way. I know there's a lot of that going on in the English market, some of it also in the continental European markets. I don't want to go into too much detail because this is obviously a time when you sort out, I think the English term is, you sort out the sheep from the goats. And there have been a number of markets that have very well reacted in a very constructive and also in a very in a very good manner. Some of them obviously had, in some underwriting experiences that some of my colleagues had over the last month, obviously you saw that the hardening of the market that we've seen over the last 1.5-2 years, especially in property, and the scenarios of the COVID-19 crisis created a perfect storm scenario. So from a capacity standpoint, things are looking much more dire than they used to look half a year ago. But overall, especially from a claims management standpoint, I think we should also look at the positives and say that a lot of markets have reacted quite well. Now, coming back on technology, I think once again, big advantage for those companies, insurers and clients who've experienced and who've experimented with technology before. So if you have, like some of the larger German companies, if you have started to do risk engineering in a remote fashion with, let's say, for example, 3D goggles or drones, you clearly were an advantage in risk engineering and also in case of a claim. If you haven't done so, but were able to adapt quickly, then you still had a certain advantage. But I also know that when it came to resources, and I think Martin was talking about scarcity of resources, we certainly saw that on the claims handling side with the insurance markets in Germany and continental Europe, then there were some challenges around. But once again, I think the overall topic for me is continue working on your business continuity and crisis management plans, train for them, use them before you have to. And then I think, it's not about digitalization of the industry anymore. And I haven't heard any of my older colleagues complaining that they have to use iPhones and video conference meetings. I think we are way past that. It's probably a good thing.
Yeah. It's an acceleration, isn't it? I mean, just having a conversation with John Ludlow at AIRMIC in the UK, and he was saying that basically AIRMIC itself was going through a digitalization process and that's just been ramped up within a matter of weeks, whereas it probably would have taken a year. And I know that you, GVNW, I think you're planning an online conference symposium in September. It's just the way it's going to happen. With the plans, we talked about the plans, and I think you and Thierry both mentioned that actually plans were there and people were kind of ready. Were they specifically ready for a pandemic, or was it just for a catastrophe which would force the company to stop actually producing? Is that?
I don't think anyone was specifically prepared for a pandemic, even though I know some companies, my own included, that started to plan for a pandemic global event not later than mid-February, so weeks before, you know, we had a public discussion about it, because we could see the signs of it coming. But you know, at the end of the day, this is risk management. Risk management is about knowing where the interfaces in the company are and making sure they work together as smoothly as they can. And in a situation like this, which is very much about employees, about health, you need the health and safety guys work closely with HR, work closely with the business. Obviously, yeah. The risk management functions, corporate risk management functions, but also the insurance risk management function needs to be involved. And if you make sure that all these networks also on a personal basis work fine, then usually the reactions within the company and outside of the company can be as swift as they need to be. But it's always a reaction, because I don't think anyone could specifically plan for this scenario at that point in time. I think that would be an exaggeration.
No, I think it truly was an exceptional set of circumstances. And on the whole, people have reacted pretty well. Maybe Dogu, as the other customer on the panel, I could bring you into this point. I think, yes, from what I've seen and experienced, Alexander's absolutely right. Most insurers have worked hard to try and try and make sure that the business continues to run as usual, and they're helping their customers when and where they can. But at the same time, there has been criticism, particularly in the US and the UK, of a very tight and, shall we just say, conflicting approach to dealing with some claims, notably BI claims. What's the experience that you've seen in Turkey, Dogu, of how the market has dealt with claims, before I ask you about the main risks associated with opening up? What's the feeling in Irma about the reaction in the insurance market?
Yeah, thank you, Adrian. First of all, I want to thank you, also Commercial Europe and Balfour, for this valuable webinar platform. I believe we are in an important turning point in modern history, and we call this period, as you know, a great pause. So we all paused, and we understood that public health is the main reason of this great pause, and the public health is the origin of this crisis. And it seems that initially public health will recover first, and afterwards economies and markets will recover. So and also this COVID period remind us that we need to find new ways to solve the old problems, because 100 years ago we also encountered the same kind of pandemic problem in the world. This problem. So it seems that for this kind of disasters, we have to solve new solutions to encounter or to solve these old problems. I want to talk about the disasters or the disaster or the crisis management in the sector or in the companies. As you know, disasters are unforeseen events, and that can be significantly put our organizations at risk. And also, the disaster recovery is the process of resuming to our normal operations. So we understood that it's so important that we have to do lots of actions to recover our old production or old processes. In my perspective, because of the technological improvements and the techno life of our production or corporates, technically, I understood disaster recovery is mainly about IT resilience, because we understand again how technology or how technological backbone is so important for companies. So for disaster recovery response, we should follow a disaster recovery plan. Building a disaster recovery plan is so expensive, we understood again, because it requires a huge investment in cost, in time, and also it needs technical expertise. And in COVID, we understand again that it's so important to recover this all this in the shortest possible time during a period of acute stress. I believe the key thing in to remember is that in a disaster recovery plan is a living or breathing document or procedure, because it should reflect the current status of the business, the current status of the corporate. So there must be a link between these plans, disaster plans, and the change management plan of the company. And also, we understood again that there are lots of alternatives this, managing this disaster plans. One is having this kind of services, disaster services, is a unique alternative for managing by yourself. What I mean, you can also not just manage your disaster management plan, but also you can have this kind of services. Because of the cloud solutions nowadays, it's so important that you have to replicate your production infrastructure on cloud, and also you have to. It became important that it's so important that you have to build up your systems onto a secondary platform or recovery platform or recovery infrastructure. So this kind of alternative disaster programs or services by the third parties, they provide pay-as-you-go system pricing models, pay-as-you-go system pricing models, or they provide you automated virtual platforms that can minimize your recovery time after a failure. In this period also, we understood that how crisis management is so important. In fact, we can divide crisis management into three periods. One is pre-crisis readiness, the second is crisis response, and the third is post-crisis actions. In all of this, we saw that how leadership is so important. The CEO, general manager, or a spokesman is so important in these kinds of stresses or disasters. We encounter the same fact again. So after the number one rule is you have to have a plan according to us. But the second one is you have to have a concrete leadership, a spokesperson to, that will manage your corporate or manage your organization. So leadership is so important. The third thing we encountered in the COVID pause, we see that how to be honest and how to be open is so important, because openness, flexibility, openness, and being honest to the community and to the employees, or it's so important. And as I say employee, the other point is that in this crisis management programs, it seems that we have to keep our employees always informed. They shouldn't be out of the circle. The other thing is we have to continuously communicate with our suppliers and with our customers, because in the crisis we saw that lots of companies they stopped their communication with these customers, they stopped their communication with their suppliers, but in those bad days they mostly need us. So it seems that it's important to in this disaster days we have to communicate with our suppliers and customers, and also keep our employees informed. The other thing is another new point is not forgetting about social media. So most of the plans in the plans of the disaster recovery plans of the companies, I think there is no social media item. So as the COVID process is the high peak point of digitalization or social media or online purchasing. So it seems online screening is the peak of this process. It seems that we shouldn't forget also like our customers, like our employees, and like our suppliers. Social media should be one of the items in our disaster recovery plans. I believe another thing, very important thing, is scenario management. For future management, we have to create lots of scenarios. Risk management departments also strategy departments and also for this disaster recovery management managers or organizations, it seems that it's so important to think about future to cook, in a way, I can say, to cook future scenarios. So we saw again how important this providing or generating this multiple and independent scenarios for the future. So it seems that thinking about future and thinking about this kind of risks, but independent and multiple risks, I can say, because at the same time, a lot of risks can be combined at the same time, and the impact of those combined risks may harm more than the unique risk itself. So this kind of scenario management, cooking scenarios, it seems one of the main items of our crisis management plans. And as a result, I believe the main thing of this disaster recovery plans or this crisis management plans, they should, anyhow, they should be systematic, they should be holistic, and also they should be comprehensive. These three items should be at the same time, I believe, systematic, comprehensive, and the holistic perspective should be on the agenda of the management of the corporates, I believe.
Yeah, thank you, Doug. We've got a question coming in here which relates to another element. I'd like to ask all of you, actually. We'll start with you, Doug, and then just put your hand up to answer. Yeah, as we go, will supply chains be radically changed as a result of this crisis? Is everybody going to bring their production close to home because they don't want to get into this bottleneck situation that we've experienced? And will the insurance market react with a whole bunch of wonderful supply chain insurance products as a result? Which I think is probably a webinar in itself. Thierry, you were first, and then you, Alexander. Thierry.
Yeah, I think it's a very good question, because the description of the supply chain and sometimes in this crisis is one of the biggest challenge of a lot of our clients. I think the company, the risk management of the company, have really to see the supply chains now not only as a procurement tool or business model, but also as a really risk management crucial topics as they have to deal with. I think the experience, our clients are changing and are improving as they are working hard on this topic, which is a very, very complex topic. But we have seen recently after the automotive industry CBI claims Meridian and Rectisel affected a lot of automotive clients. We could see that after these claims, the our clients have changed significantly their view and how they manage their supply chains. So I think it's still a very, very complex topic for our clients, but also for as an insurance company. We are working hard on this. And I have to say that probably the insurance industry raised these topics for a few years already, and with or sometimes without effective impact. But I think it will change. I think our clients will change our the view of the supply chain, some industry sector even more. But I would as Martin say and Alexander, it's a catalyst. It will be an acceleration probably. But all our big global companies clients are working on this topic. But it's a very complex one.
Thank you, Thierry. Alexander, do you have
I totally agree with what Thierry said. We've seen the importance of knowing and managing your supply chains almost 10 years ago in the earthquake and tsunami events in Asia. And even though I don't think everything has been done that was necessary, since a lot has been done, I don't see a rapid change of supply chains to the extent that we will see companies move production sites back or closer to home immediately, but I think it's an issue, and I've heard that discussion within companies. So I think slowly in managing, knowing your supply chains, we will also see elements of that. Now, to the response of the traditional insurance markets, I think it's safe to say that for these sort of events, traditional insurance lines do not respond sufficiently. So I think there will be an even more or an even louder discussion around finding and or creating the right solutions in whatever means for insurance to respond to these sort of catastrophic losses. Because otherwise, coming back to the value of insurance, we might have a different discussion altogether. By the way, this is also where the discussion about a public-private partnership between the private insurance markets and governments, potentially even supranational organizations such as the EU, rightfully kick in. And as an association, we very, very much welcome that discussion on other lines of insurance to be created, as much as on state and government schemes to prepare for the next pandemia and other catastrophic events. But I don't think this will come very quickly either.
Thank you, Alexander. My network's slowing down. Martin, do you have some comments to add on this particular?
My first thoughts about that question was, yes, it would be a reasonable reaction to bring back productions to Europe. The second thought was, it won't happen. And the third one is, we shouldn't wish that, because the pandemic proved to all of us that no one is an island. So the entire world is already strongly connected. And I think everyone benefits if there's a well-running economy in every part of the world. So from a more personal or maybe political part of view, no, I don't think so. I don't think production is coming back to Europe.
Bianca, yeah, do you have some have a perspective on this important area?
Well, I would actually rather respond to Alexander. He touched upon a few things, and I agree with Martin. I don't think that that production will come back to Europe. I agree with Alexander that we have some, as we did in the past, that we have some room for working together really closely, in particular on supply chain topics. I think as an insurance industry, we have a role to play in working very closely with the customer. With all the pandemics causing challenges for us, it's also a big learning curve and a steep learning curve for us. And I'm very much looking forward to actually take on that challenge and manage afterwards what needs to be changed in close cooperation.
Cooperation being a key word all the way through, collaboration and cooperation. Got another question here.
For the supply chain issue, in this great pause, we all see how this tier two and also tier three management is so crucial. Because stopping or the closure period, most of the companies, they try to understand their tier two or three companies, whether they are producing in China, whether they are producing in Europe, in Africa, or what kind of stocks they have, or are there any vessels on the road taking the goods to them. So it seems that tier two or three companies are so important for the big production companies also. So I believe visibility is the key at this point. We have to be much more, we should create transparency on this multi-tier or multi-layer supply chain. with loss of technological infrastructure. So we understood how important it is, because the lead time is so crucial for production, also for customer satisfaction. I believe near shoring, or they say right shoring, will become much more popular. Maybe as big industry, big companies won't come back to Europe, because most probably it seems that industry 4.0 activities and attempts will speed up, okay, or dark factory, I mean fully automated factories or no labor factories, may spread with the cheaper technologies, also with the cheaper, becoming cheaper robots or robotics or automated systems. It's okay, industrial 4.0 may speed up, but tier 2 or 3 factories supplying to those big factories or fully automated factories may come near those countries in the middle run, maybe not in the short run, but in the middle run. So I believe near shoring or right shoring will be one of the popular items in the middle run. And also, I believe in the insurance market, we have lots of products, but non-damage BI, non-damage business interruption products may be reorganized for supply chains in terms of coverage, and also, of course, in terms of pricing, because companies may not reach those kind of products. If the insurance sector may reorganize those products solely for supply chain, non-damage BI solutions, and if we have much more competitive prices, most of the customers will demand those kind of solutions, risk management solutions. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Got some interesting questions here. We've only got like 3 minutes to go, so I'm going to throw a really big one at you. COVID-19 is accelerating change across all sectors, as we've just been discussing, digitization, etc. What is the insurance industry going to do over the next 6 to 12 months to radically improve the way it operates, particularly with claims, perhaps? Thierry? Oh, he dodged it, Martin.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, I think it just showed to everybody, and it's not only insurers but also clients, brokers, all the value chain, that we have to be a little bit more creative and to really to develop solution, to do more remote stuff, and this solution, to be honest, already exists. So There is a lot of resistance, not only from our clients, but from our own people in insurance company to move this step. But I think we have to do this, not only because of this situation, crisis situation, but also we have to be more efficient, in this industry. And we see we have to be more efficient, to be a little bit more profitable, and to be able to invest again and in technology, and to answer to the need of our clients. There are plenty of needs which are not covered by insurance company because the assessment of this risk are not easy, and we need technology to support this assessment. So I think we'll continue to push for this, and I think we need all actors in this industry to try and to be creative, a little bit more open for new technology and new solutions.
Good, Thierry. Martin, very quick response before we close at 3 o'clock.
To change in insurance industry, well, I think insurance industry is under pressure from different areas, and my wish to insurance industry is just not to forward this pressure, but to try to figure out solutions and a kind of collaboration with your service suppliers and your customers. We are supplier, but we are customer as well.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure. most leaders of the risk management associations across Europe would agree with you on that. We've got some great questions coming in kind of at the last minute, so we're going to have to deal with those. I think we actually have the basis of another webinar here talking about COVID and BI and the response and what next. And Alexander, you touched on the private partnership, public-private partnership, very important area. Going to have to end it there. Thank you very much to Martin and Belfort. Thanks, Alexander, Dogu, Bianca, Thierry. Thank you very much for your help and time. Thank you.
Safe and healthy, everyone.
Yeah, you too.
Well, thank you. Bye.